AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
What are the top three running myths that have been made popular by social media?
Zone 2.
Oh,
is definitely
one. I can't be arsed with this, man.
The only time I've been injured in the last 6 years was after I took a break from running.
Valencia half marathon, 61:26. How on earth did you do that, man? On your debut marathon, what time would you shoot for?
I might get a bit of stick for this.
As a kind of athlete, you got the, you know, your nutrition and hydration partner. You got your kit, and then you got your shoes. Like, you got that the three pillars to fill. And once you get that, you're sweet.
Yeah.
Welcome, bro.
Thank
this
you.
Is where we're going. So, how you been, man?
Very well.
You're very a bit well. Sore today.
Yeah, a little bit sore. I didn't know how bad it was going to be, but throughout the day, it's just been getting considerably worse as
it's
the day's gone.
Even worse tomorrow morning as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, 61:26. Is that correct?
It's a shame because it was 61:23 on my watch. But yeah, I've got to go with 61:26 because that's the official result.
Don't be
result.
Doing Strava time, bro.
Coros time.
It's been a while since we caught up. I had you on just after you'd done. Was it like from January time that you came on my pod?
Yeah.
In the old iteration, and you'd just done the Malaga half and you'd accidentally won it. Since then, you've gone on to massive things and you signed with 247. Just let's just go way back, man. Since we last caught up, how has life been?
It's been good. It's been eventful. I find it quite funny, actually, because before the podcast started, we were having a conversation that we can't talk about on here.
Yeah.
And previously, when I came on, we were having a conversation that we couldn't talk about with me signing with 247 and MyProtein.
Yeah.
So it's literally identical to that.
Yeah.
After a half marathon as well, what was in Spain. So it
almost feels like for like, except you are in a like far, like higher up position in the running world now. Like, you were kind of that established yourself, it felt like. Obviously, you've been about for a while, but in terms of making yourself a mainstream name in the sport, I feel like that was your real kind of calling, that race.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think at the time I only had about 20,000 followers when I came on the podcast as well.
Yeah.
And obviously I'd always wanted to come on to chat to you, and but the response I got from that podcast was kind of the reason why I started talking a bit more on content.
Oh, sick.
Because people like, it was just fun to, or like insightful to listen to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So for me since then, it's just kind of been a bit of a whirlwind. You're probably aware of it as well with brand deals and traveling and stuff, and then trying to fit that in with training. But yeah, it's completely different life to what it was in January this year.
Yeah, man. Also as well, I want to say thank you to you, because our pod we did together really put me onto the whole, I really want to talk about this niche and focus down into a route of like getting people on with an amazing story of people pushing themselves to the limits. And I found that pod, the feedback that I'd got from that episode was unlike anything I'd experienced yet doing content. And it was so sick because I was like, I'm in no way qualified to sort of like talk about a lot of the stuff we talk about on this pod, but I feel like it was a great signpost for me to be like, right, I'm passionate about this. I'm getting on people that really know what they're talking about. Yeah, there's no rules. Like, you don't need to be some sort of like, I don't need to be a 69 minute half marathoner to have skin in the game to chat to someone like you and have a good conversation. Like, you can literally be anyone. So yeah, thank you for that, man.
No, it's all good. I think honestly though, talking about running is something that since I've been in the game for like 20 years now, a lot of time people critique people to like say, oh, that's wrong, or like the coaching's wrong. Mm. So when you have a guest on, and even things I probably said in January, I'd probably say different now.
Yeah.
And it's almost so hard to kind of go into that just bubble of running and just talk about it. And I'm sure you get the thing now where you have a guest on and they say something and then someone goes, they're wrong. Or like,
yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That's the beauty of it. There's so much nuance about training and how people have their views on running and what their goals are in running. Like, you're obviously doing, are you allowed to say you're doing New York this weekend?
Yeah, because it will be announced by the time this goes out. Yeah.
Okay. So like, you're doing that to pace your fiance?
Yeah.
And some people might have a problem with that, saying, oh, if you're doing a race and you're taking a ballot spot, you should be running flat out.
Yeah.
And that's just a crazy concept, but people have that opinion. So
exactly. And actually, Hugo sat exactly, that seat said exactly that. He's like, if you're doing a race with an influencer spot or like a creator spot, sponsored spot, whatever you want to call it, you should be putting yourself in the absolute bin. I said, I agree with you having an opinion. I just don't care. Yep. And that's not my opinion.
Openness of opinion, which today, you know, with social media is very much a thing that you can't shy away from.
Yeah.
It also means you have to be honest, and you can get caught out if one day you're saying something and then don't stand by your principles and the next you're doing
for
something
sure.
else.
For sure.
It's very easy to catch up on that as well. So as much as it comes with its negatives, like I just ran with someone then and they were telling me that someone told them to the face. Like, I think it's quite toxic how much you post online about that you run so much. Like, apparently
Sorry?
It's toxic to do that. I mean, it's like, again, you're fine to have that opinion. But as much as you say, like to say opinions can't be wrong, it's a pretty
Wait,
wrong
sorry.
Opinion.
So someone told a content creator who focuses in running that they're posting too much about running.
Yeah, it's toxic how much they run. And they don't. It's not toxic how much they run. But
oh, mate, this actually does my head in. I had Liz on earlier, which comes out next week. But we were discussing this and it was the whole, you can't say something shouldn't be done because it's not normal when everyone posting online is posting because what they are posting isn't normal. Does mm-hmm. that make sense? Like, there is no shame in doing something abnormal.
Yeah.
It's just like you doing 200K weeks, okay, to 98% of the world, sorry, 99.9% of the world, that's insane, okay? And quote unquote, not healthy. To you, it's what you need to do to stay with the best. Because yep. you're an athlete.
Like, you see yeah. one thing on TikTok or Instagram, and then that's kind of, it formulates your whole opinion about something that can just change overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have it sometimes in comments, which the people were defending me, to be fair, but I almost wanted to kind of go, you're wrong for saying that, because someone disagreed with me on a TikTok, which is fine to do. And people came to my defense and was like, oh, he's ran a 20-minute 10K, you think he knows what he's talking about. And it's kind of like, that shouldn't be enough for my opinion to be more valid than that person.
Yeah.
In the same way, that content creator could be as right about training as me talking about it here. And in that case, if someone, let's say Andreas Holmgren, who broke the European record
yeah.
on Sunday, we do train really similar, which is high volume and stuff. But so anything I say about training, is that wrong because then he's better than me? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not how it works.
No.
And it is rare in other areas of the, like, social media. I think running is such a massive, not issue, but it seems to be very prevalent in running, the way people always have an opinion and it's always that you're wrong, and it's never consistent as well.
Yeah, I think I get the kind of whole common comment on, like, when my clips go viral, let's say, or, you know, get a couple hundred thousand views or whatever you want to call it. You'll always get the people in the comments saying, oh, bro has run a couple of marathons and thinks he knows what he's talking about. It's like, okay, right. So football content creators will make a football podcast and they'll talk about their team performing XYZ. Okay. They've never played Premier League football. They just watch games on a weekly basis. They've got an opinion. I watch running. I watch running. I'm invested in the running space. I'm aware of what's going on. I'm allowed to have an opinion, even if you don't necessarily agree with it. Just because I'm not someone like yourself running 200K a week doesn't necessarily make it less valid, unless it's me giving advice.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I was to be advising on training and they'd say that, I think that's completely fair. I'm not a qualified coach, none of that. You're much more set up in a position to give that qualified advice. I think that's where we can agree.
Yeah. But I think also as well, like, if you said, in my opinion,
yeah.
I find if I do these activations before a run, it makes me feel less prone to injury. That's a valid experience that you've had, and
yeah.
someone comes on and goes, well, actually the science is this or whatever, it's irrelevant because you've spoken your experience and that's what's happened, and that's all I do. And it's the same with, I don't know, I've not listened to Hugo podcast yet. He's training, well, probably he's training objectively, he's kind of crazy and stupid at times,
yeah.
but it sort of works for him.
Yeah.
And as much as I disagree with it entirely, I said that to him at Saucony 10K. I was like, you do know if you put that much effort into training properly, you'd be faster. But he doesn't care. It's the way he wants to train.
Yeah.
And it's the way he wants to do things. And it's just, who am I to take that away? There's no exact way to do it. If everyone, like for me, if I go, why didn't you do a double threshold this Tuesday? Like, if you want to get as good at running as possible, you should do that. Like, there's reason you didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, that's just the case of everyone. And it's the same reason that I'm not in Kenya right now doing 200K a week at altitude.
Yeah.
There's factors what just dictate people's lives. And it's fine to have a difference in opinion.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get on to your incredible achievement on Sunday, but I kind of wanted us just to go back to when we last spoke. Mm-hmm. Obviously something we spoke off camera was you signing for 247. That was something that was going on in the background whilst we, you know, we did the interview and that all came out. Talk to me about that. Was that a massive moment for your career?
Yeah, huge. I think for many reasons that I didn't realize at the time as well.
Yeah.
From a perspective of a fan, I was a massive fan of 247, represent as a brand.
Yeah.
So kind of, it was really cool to go into that at the time. But what I didn't really think about would be the people who were currently involved, you know, Jake and George Heaton mostly, like learning from what they do and how they live their life was like a massive thing for me in terms of growth as a person in the last 6 months or so, or 9 months. So at the time, it was my first contract, paid contract for running. So technically it made me a pro runner, which made, it almost feels like you have a bit more, I don't know how to word this. So you kind of respect yourself more and respect that what you're doing more, because it almost feels like there's now a reason for it because you're getting paid to do it and other people are almost putting faith in you to do it as well.
How does the rest of the pro field look at you becoming like an athlete for a fashion brand? Is there any sort of snobbery to that?
There probably is, but it's probably the same as the things we were just discussing, how people are going to have difference in opinions, especially in a sport what is really old fashioned.
Yeah.
I think there's probably snobbery of people who have pro contracts full stop, to be honest with you, just because people think running should be this wonderful amateur sport where no one makes money and no one does anything other than just run in like a really gritty, rainy race without a GPS watch. Like a lot of people still have that mindset. So there probably was. I've not really paid attention to it or seen it too much. But for me, it was just the best case scenario at that time. I've kind of worked with brands like New Balance I worked with last year, not on a paid role, but I was a New Balance athlete.
You lived in the New Balance house or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I lived in New Balance house, had to wear New Balance shoes, was coached in the New Balance group. Didn't work for me, but when you sort of, you have that amount of restrictions on you as an athlete where it has to be the shoes, has to be the training, it really limits growth. And I feel like because I still wasn't quite where I needed to be in terms of performance compared to, you know, people I raced yesterday, for example, it being with 247 really allowed me to just do exactly what I needed to do and wear the shoes I needed to wear and train the way I needed to train. So it's been a life-changing, well, it was a life-changing contract and still is. And it's just been a crazy ride, obviously, from doing shoots with them and just like going to Iceland. It's just been a mental experience.
So cool, man. Obviously, like you've referenced like George and Jake and people like that. How's it been going on those sorts of trips to Iceland? Obviously, you guys ran, was it across or top to bottom or top to bottom to top? What was the challenge that you guys did?
We ran top to bottom.
Yeah.
That trip is actually, I need to say this lightly because it's probably, I have not got PTSD in the sense of someone who actually suffers from PTSD would have it.
No, but I get
in terms
you,
of how I would describe it.
You can say
it,
that with a pinch of salt, it's fine.
Yeah,
mate.
I have severe issues with that trip as a whole.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim, that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
It was the worst I've ever felt in my entire life in certain times.
And you've put yourself in the bin a few times.
Yeah, yeah. It was meant to be a little loop around Iceland. And at the time, not a little loop, it was 540K. But at the time, we had the route. The person who planned the route gave us a route. No one looked at it. The runners didn't. And then on the day we were supposed to start, start the next morning. But that morning, so Friday morning, Jake was like, "This route looks terrible. We need to run across Iceland." Not because it's the first time he's looked at the route. So they got a map out and was like, "We'll do this instead." So then we're like, "We'll set off tonight instead as well." So we basically didn't have any sleep for 60 hours. Oh. And that, the sleep deprivation, I went in with it with an injury, and everyone else there was already used to it. I was just, yeah, it was shocking.
Because it's quite a long shot from just doing 40K around the track in Sheffield to hammering up hills and stuff in the mountains of Iceland. Is it quite flat, actually?
No.
No.
No. It was pretty rough. The wind was the worst part. So the first day, anything I say about it will sound terrible. It's now, looking back, it's probably the best experience of my life. Sure, the things you learn from it.
Sorry to interrupt, it's like any race when you put yourself in the absolute bin, you feel shit in the moment. You look back and go, "That was amazing."
Yeah. It was exactly like that, just prolonged over a few days. And the running was probably actually the easiest part. It was the sleep deprivation. But at one point, I remember we just stopped at a service station. And obviously, as everyone else stops, someone has to carry on running. And it was Jake. He was the one who always, "Oh, you guys stop here. I'll carry on running for a bit while you can freshen up."
He seems to be like that character in all of these events. Like even in the, what's it called? The Los Angeles to Vegas thing.
Yeah.
Speed Project.
He is probably it depends on you judge the metrics, but in a lot of ways, he's probably the best person I've ever met, at least the most selfless person I've ever met.
100%.
Yeah. In terms of what he does for people. But he was like, "You stop, I'll carry on." So we caught him up again, and he didn't mention this at the time. I'm not sure if the conditions changed, but George was next, and we were driving 3K up the road, and it took him 21 minutes to do 3K because he was literally running at 6:30 per kilometer pace and was like, "I might as well walk." He got so fed up because of the wind. The wind was just battering us for about 12 hours.
Oh,
and with the amount of distance we covered was terrible. And at that point, I was like, we're not going to make it because the people have got flights to catch and stuff. And it was like, there's no chance we make it. And as we're running up this hill, there was like RVs and caravans just like absolutely demolished on the side of the road. It was the windiest thing I've ever been in. And I was like, I really want the medical staff to call it here and say it's too unsafe to run.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he didn't. But I can remember running. I was like, "Please just come and stop me and say you need to stop and we'll drive you home." But that didn't happen. it was mental. We got the police involved a few times as well. It's just a crazy experience.
What's the kind of dynamic of a group like that? Because obviously you've got someone like yourself who is like, I would say you're as thoroughbred as a runner as you're going to get in that group.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got someone like Russ, who's just an absolute mad guy who's run through across Africa. And then he doesn't really have a training strategy. He's just someone who is just a mentalist, if that makes sense, when it comes to running. You got Jake, who's built different, so to speak, but he's a bit more rugged, let's say, in terms of his training approach. Like, he's happy to be the guy that's gonna take the team on his back. And you've also got Hercules, used to doing loads of ultras. How's that team dynamic work?
So I'd say Jake and Russ, exactly, you just described them. Russ is exactly how he seems,
yeah,
on camera. As if you said, "Oh, there's this guy who buries himself alive and runs across Africa," that's exactly how he acts, and that's exactly how he was. I can remember when Jake, I was like, "I really don't want this route to change," and everyone else walked in and was like, "Yeah, sure, let's do it." Like, I was just so concerned. I was injured at the time. I was like, "I'm not gonna get any sleep. It's gonna be 700K rather than 540 and they're all just like, "Yeah, sure, let's do it." I'm not sure if that was almost like a, not an ego thing, but Joe, because it's their kind of stick, is the whole "let's suffer together."
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like, even better, it's going to be even harder. And that's what they were all like. And I think George, obviously, as a business owner, doesn't need to do any of this stuff
No.
at all.
No.
So I'd say me and him were definitely the sulkiest.
Really?
Probably me overall, because I was really quite concerned about the injury at some points. And then the sleep deprivation, just, I was looking for Ubers and like, well, not Ubers, but buses, like a 6-hour bus ride to get a, to get to the airport the day before. It was the middle of the night, and I was like, when's the next bus I can catch? I was tempted to just get dropped off on the side of the road and go. And I didn't, which I don't know how that would have looked if I did.
But, oh, mate, imagine. Everyone else is like, stuck this out, and then you're like, nah, fuck this, I'm getting the bus.
Well, that's kind of at the moment. I was like, that seems the most logical thing to do. It never seemed like it was going to end. And anyway, like I said, we were probably the sulkiest, but definitely me. But afterwards, I kind of was chatting to George. I almost like apologized for like, not how I acted, because I didn't act bad, but you know, like if Russ kind of said something to me, it was like, if we ask you if you're all right, just say yeah, regardless. It was in a nice way. And he was like, yeah, you got to say you're fantastic, even if you're feeling absolutely shit. And after, it was kind of like, that's all they were doing. They also felt terrible, but they were just keeping the whole spirit of the team up by
pretending.
I do think,
though, it is horses for courses, mate. Like, I look at this group dynamic that you had, and I go, this is me, all due respect here, Alfie is the black sheep here because he is the most thoroughbred runner. Mm. He's the one that is literally just, you're literally at a track all the time doing these 30K loops, mate. Like, you are pure performance over anything. There's this, they're kind of like, I guess, selling point and characters are quite different to yours. So I would almost be like, if someone said to me, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at that. And not in like a negative way. I'd be like, that's completely fair enough.
Yeah. Do you know what's funny though? If you added up our splits, I probably ran the slowest.
Really?
So even though I'm the thoroughbred runner, I was probably the slowest there. It is how they go about their life and what they choose to do.
Yeah.
But I think it is exactly how you said the analogy to just doing a race where you hate it at the time.
Yeah.
They hate it just as much as we would, but they almost
relish it. Yeah.
But yeah, afterwards I was talking to Jake and George, and they were kind of like, yeah, it's an act. Like, not them liking it or not them liking to suffer, but how they are with the rest of the team is all an act just to keep morale high.
Yeah.
Because they were like, every single time people were struggling, like Will, I think we all thought he was going to die on the first day. He was moaning, and he was basically essentially paralyzed for like 12 hours. Couldn't move.
Why?
Well, he'd fallen off. He'd had an accident, I think.
Yeah.
But at the time, he was like, you can't show this because I'm doing Sydney Marathon. And he had to cut holes out of his shoes. He couldn't walk. And then he still did more running than me in the end.
Really?
But he was literally, I say paralyzed, not lightly. Like he couldn't move for 12 hours, just laid horizontal.
What was the injury?
That specific thing, I think he basically absolutely messed up his collarbone. But I think when he crashed, obviously...
Was it like a motorbike crash?
I think so, yeah.
Like a moped?
Yeah, I think so. And his toe was disgusting. I'll show you a picture after. It's absolutely vile. There's no toe left. And it must be nerve-related, but he would finish a run and then like keel over. And then he was like moaning a lot. And then the medical staff came in. I say medical staff, there's one medical person, but and yeah, he just had to lay still for about 12 hours.
Mad.
And then he just got back up and carried on running and just put in a stint like everyone else.
That is insane. So that's a crazy experience that you've had, first year as a 247 athlete.
Yep.
What would you rate out of 10 then?
Depends what metric you're asking me to rate.
Yeah. We'll park that
10 out of 10 for some, 1 out of 10 for others.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going back to Iceland anytime soon, put it that way.
No, you're not going to swim around it like Ross Edgley.
That is, because he was doing it at the same time.
Oh, was he? Of course, yeah.
Wasn't exactly the nicest of weather, so it's crazy.
Yeah, no, that guy's insane. Valencia half marathon, 61:26. How on earth did you do that, man? Was that the plan?
Sort of, but not really. The plan was to try and run as hard as possible, which when there's so many fine margins, which we can get into, you don't know if that's going to be your A-star performance or if you're going to be struggling a bit and then end up running a minute slower because it's a half where a few seconds a kilometer makes such a big difference. So the plan was to perform well, but because it was my first hard race of the season and how I trained, I had no clue where I was fitness-wise really going into it. I knew I was in good shape because I know the training. I've been running for so long.
Had you done a 10K in the build-up? You did 10K a few weeks back, no?
Yes, but it was kind of a 10K race where I tempoed the first 5K and then ran as hard as possible on the way back. I was first by a few minutes. So there was no one, there was nothing to
Pack to cling on to, yeah.
I actually did a cross country race last week well, because I always like to do a race before a race to get really tuned up. So the plan was just run as hard as possible. And as soon as we set off, I kind of knew exactly what that was going to be like, which was going to be absolutely relentless from the start.
Yeah.
Everyone was going so fast, but in a half at that level, there isn't like a stream of runners constantly. There's packs what break up, and it was either you run faster with that pack or you get dropped and run by yourself. And it's always run faster with that pack. So yeah, I was getting actually really annoyed the first 5K because my heart rate was 187 after 1K, which is, I don't really understand how that was. I shouldn't have looked, to be honest, but I saw it and I was like, this is going to be...
But you felt good.
Yeah. And I was like, this is going to end very badly. So I just ran with the pack, 5K in. I was like, 14:15 of 5K.
Yeah, I've got your splits here.
And I was just like, this still feels good. And then 10K, like, this still feels good. And then 15K really started to hurt. But then we hit a bit of wind and it kind of went downhill and slowed a bit. But the effort was always there, running with the same pack all the way through. And we all finished together like in a kick. So it was just an insane day. And that's it all crazy. Came together.
Wait, your split. So 5K, as you said, 14:15. 10K, 28:36. Which can't be far off the... What is the British record?
So it's, I think it's 27:30.
And that was Rory Leonard, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was next to him at the time going through 10K.
And was Rory doing the half or was he pacing?
So he was doing the half, but he dropped out. I think he said on his post something to do with stomach problems or something. Okay. The whole team, Macau, had just come down from altitude. So you never, it's Got a mixed you. Bag how you're going to be after you come down from altitude anyway. But they were just kind of doing it as like a fitness test, I think, more than anything. To be honest, I think if we were doing a 10K race that day, there was probably a few of us who could have had a crack at the British record.
Really?
Just with how comfortable it was. Like, there was me, Alex Shee, Charlie Wheeler, Ben Connor, and Rory, all still in the same pack going through 10K in 28:36.
Mad. That's insane. And then you hit 15, 43:05, 20, and 58:02. And then you finished, obviously, with a 61:26.
Yep.
What was it like running with Alex? Have you run with him before?
Not with him, because in Valencia, he was actually ahead of me all the way. So I never actually...
That was the 10K?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I should say that.
Was that in February?
January. I think that was either... That was the race I did before I... Oh, no, because I did a cross country race as well. I can't remember if that was the race I actually did next to your podcast. Either.
We did it. We did our pod before that race.
Okay.
100%.
So that was the race I did after the podcast then.
Yeah.
But yeah, Valencia 10K and then Valencia half. I was behind Alex all the way in Valencia 10K, so I never actually ran with him. Whereas for this, we were together pretty much for 20 kilometers. He was a bit ahead of me at the start. And I mean, when you're in the race, it's just another person you're in the race with. It's not cooler than running with a random stranger. Obviously, looking back, he's the Olympic champion. He's probably a triathlon goat at this point. And he's just an unbelievably nice guy. And it's funny because most of my comments on Instagram and TikTok after saying well done is, oh, imagine getting chased down by Alex Shee, or imagine running with Alex Shee. And as much as cool as that is, I really want to correct them and say he was not chasing me down. I'd actually kicked away from him, but I'll allow people to say he was chasing me down.
Okay, so wait, so you was he ahead of you in the pack most of the time then?
Yeah, he actually dropped me with, he put in a bit of an effort with 2K to go, and about a mile to go, I got dropped a bit. And then I always have a bit of a kick at the end of a race. So I kind of went past him. I mean, it's a very tiny detail that I was
Mate,
the one
you did the final 200 meters in 28 seconds.
Yeah. Well, do you know
That's
what?
That's insane.
I didn't want to fall into the Strava thing, but I think it was actually 27, but I didn't want to say it just in case.
Okay. So this was according to Chip.
Well, this was according to sort of, you can look at it two ways. So there's obviously current pace and then also distance based off tracking.
Yeah.
And I went off the distance and tracking, not pace, because I think it was like a 27.2 on my watch, but I wasn't allowed to say 27.2.
Well, stats are just unreal, aren't they? You can just look at them all day.
It is, yeah.
it's such a like rabbit hole.
I do love it. It's especially nice looking at it when you've got a massive PB as well, because you're like, I can't really comprehend how I did that. Like, even after you do it, it's a bit like, now I've got to train at that pace. Because
you're the fastest Brit on the day.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It is pretty, I haven't really come to terms with that yet, to be honest.
Do you think you found your thing with half marathons?
Until I run the marathon, probably, yeah.
And is that happening?
I think I'm going to do Seville this next year.
Nice.
February.
That's a fast course.
Yeah.
Sick. So you didn't fancy doing like the Valencia double?
I would do, but it's I'm the way I train, like my longest run has been a 33K at the minute, and I'd definitely be someone to go over marathon distance in training. So I want to make sure I do it right first time round.
Yeah.
And there's quite a lot of races this winter anyway. So there's cross country, hopefully European cross country championships, and then hopefully world cross country championships. Got to qualify for both of those, which would just get in the way of the marathon prep for Valencia or Malaga. I'd go back to Malaga because I really loved that course for the half. So Seville seems like the most likely one and the most sensible one to do.
Yeah, sick. Malaga is what, second weekend of December, weekend after Valencia?
Yeah.
So yeah, the actual race itself, talk to me. So you went into it with a kind of like just full whack, didn't have a time goal in mind. I don't want to say it's like any disappointment, but would there have been a time when it clicked over to that time you would have been disappointed by your result?
Yeah, and that actually probably would have changed if you asked me at the start and then also 10K in.
Okay.
At the start, if I didn't run sub 62, I would have been disappointed because 62 is kind of, I think it's still the world championships qualification standard for the world half championships next year. So to tick that off would have been something that would help me qualify for these kind of races. And also with how easy Malaga felt and running relatively close to that, it was kind of like, if I don't have that much time in me, then I'm not as fit as I thought I was.
Got you.
So it was definitely 62. Saying that, half marathon, it's like the marathon, things can go wrong. But then 10K in, if you told me I was going to run the time I ran, I would have been still really happy because I managed to hold on. But if you asked me at 16K, when I was still feeling pretty good, you're going to run 61:26, I'd actually been pretty disappointed.
Really?
Because I didn't know what was ahead of me in terms of the wind. And we basically, when you're in survival mode anyway, because of the race and you're in a pack, trying to lead and keep the pace fast is just suicide because the wind's just battering you and you just fall off a cliff.
So how does that work then in these groups when you've got a pack and the wind is absolutely hammering you? Obviously, everyone's trying to hide behind each other. Who then goes and be like, right, I'm going to be the one at the front, but we need to keep switching. How does that conversation happen in the moment?
Well, yesterday, no one. So yesterday, it was literally when the wind was bad, we just ran a lot slower.
Right.
Which was probably mostly the wind, obviously, but also no one wanted to take it. It was funny because out of the wind, Ben Connor was the one, another British guy, doing most of the leading.
Mm-hmm.
I shared a bit with him. Charlie Wheeler shared a bit with him and Alex Shee shared a bit with him, but it was mostly Ben. And we had a conversation about 15K and he was like, do you want to take 500 meters each? And I tried to take 500 meters and was like, I've not got this. So I literally had to tell him like, I can't do this. And I just had to slot back in, which was a shame. He was probably the fittest on the day from the Brits in terms of pure fitness. Because,
and do you think because he took so much of the wind that means he didn't have that final kick like you did?
It's hard to tell because he's probably not a kicker anyway,
right?
And to be fair, when it was the windy part, we went from when he was leading it out of the wind, we were all in single file. When we were in the wind, we were across the entire road because no one wants to be the first runner.
Yeah. So you kind of, out of respect to everyone, just take it.
Yeah, it's a weird scenario, funny, that, because we're just basically agreeing to slow each other down.
Yeah. You're essentially all agreeing, right, if not one person's going to do it, we're all going to fucking fail in this situation.
If the conditions were good, and I'm not one to say like ifs and buts in terms of, oh, actually, I would have ran this time on the day, but I'm going to say that now. So that's completely...
Yeah, grandmother had wheels, she'd be a bike. Sort
of thing. But if the conditions were good, I think we would have ran sub 61. The whole
really?
I think the whole group would have ran sub 61.
Mad.
Because we were on for like 60 mid until the wind. And it wasn't, my heart rate stayed the same in the wind. So it's not like, I didn't fatigue anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the pace slowed down.
What is the reason, by the way, you said about the world champs, why do we not have an Olympic half marathon race?
I think it's just selecting distances. It's weird though, because we have two walk races, which are both really long.
Really?
Yeah. The walk races, I think it's a 30K and a 50K maybe.
Wait, there's a 50K walk race?
Or it might be 20 and 40. But I think it is long. I think it might be 50.
I saw someone today actually pop up on my reels and they walked a marathon in 3:46.
It's pretty impressive.
It's mental,
well, it's very impressive, yeah.
Yeah.
That's running at that point, isn't it?
It is running.
But the mechanics
just
of walking.
Mechanics of it, yeah.
I think also, maybe this is, I've only obviously just started doing half marathons, but I think the other reason is its name is half marathon. I think it's only just become more of a trendy thing to do. Like, what other distance is the name? Like, we could call it 21K.
True. Yeah.
Well, it's 21.1, but it's just a half marathon. That's all it is. Like, it by its name, but and also by its event, it's just an event you do in the build up to a marathon. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's the same thing like how I race 3Ks.
Yeah.
As I'm getting ready for a 5K. And there's no 3K in, well, there's 3,000 meter steeplechase, but there's no 3K in the Olympics and things. So I guess it's just selective distances, and it's probably not a, even though I think it's getting there. I was actually listening to a podcast this morning, and they were kind of saying in the next 5 or 10 years, they reckon there'll be half marathon majors.
Yeah.
And it a lot.
Yeah, because that super halves thing makes no sense. And it actually, like, I watched another video about this. The super halves is such an unappealing, like, concept, because the races themselves aren't appealing races. Like, you've got Cardiff Half, which apparently is quite a good one, but it's like balloted. And then you've got Prague is on there, sorry, but Lisbon. I was supposed to go and do that this year. I went to the wrong airport, so that was the reason I didn't go. Absolute shocker. But there was like a queue at the finish line. It got absolutely slated. Excuse me. Got absolutely slated. So, like, people were trying to get over the finish line and they actually couldn't. Like, how can you say that's a major half marathon? That's insane.
It's like Cape Town trying to get a marathon major and they cancelled the race. No? I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure it's now been given a major status because they've moved it to next May and they're making it a major.
It's not a great start, is it?
No.
Cancelling the race the day before.
It was the morning of.
Oh, was it?
Hour before.
Isn't Cape Town always windy as well?
Yeah, I don't know much about Cape Town. I can't lie. Have you been?
No, I heard someone say that. So I'm just going to run. I'm going with what we were talking about earlier. I heard someone say it. I'm just going to run with
just
it.
Just run with it. Say it with chest and you're fine.
Yeah.
So with the half marathon distance then, like I said earlier, have you found your thing? And do you think you have the potential to be like the best half marathoner in the country?
No. Not in a minute. There's Emil and Paddy Deva who are a step ahead of everyone else,
okay.
I would say.
What's Emil's PB? Sub 60?
I'm not sure if it is sub 60. He could definitely go sub 60 in a, you know, he's fully marathon now. And I'm not sure if he's not raced for a while actually. So I'm not sure.
He's had quite a few injury problems, hasn't he?
I'd say they're a step above. But after this year now, I can't see, my perception actually changed this morning.
Really?
Because I never thought I'd be able to run a 61. Until I did Malaga and ran 62. So now it's kind of, I never thought I would be able to run 60 or sub 60 until today. So, you know, maybe in a few years I'll get to their level, but at the minute they're definitely the two who are ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's probably a group of, actually we'll probably put Jack Rowe as third.
Yeah, he's rapid, isn't he?
And then there's maybe 10 of us or 5 or 10 of us who on a day could go there, the next best at the minute.
Yeah. So, right, half marathon, boxed off. Marathon. On your debut marathon, what time would you shoot for?
I might get a bit of stick for this.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
For what I'm about to say, because I'm going to play it safe.
Oh.
And go for 209.30.
Okay.
And I know that's not exactly playing it super safe, but I'm probably going to try and set off in 64 high, 65 minutes for the half marathon, and then try and cut down a bit to try and run 209.30.
Okay.
Because that's the European qualification standard. If it wasn't the European qualification standard, I'd try and run 210. But because it is, I might as well
for an shoot extra for 30 that. Seconds.
Yeah, it's nothing in the marathon.
Yeah, nothing,
is it?
Mate. Nothing.
So that's the goal.
Okay.
Which, if I was just going into a marathon and going, let's just try and run as fast as possible, I'd probably try and go out in 63, 64 for the half. Which would probably end up me blowing up and running about 2:16. But I feel like that's what you're going to do in the first marathon. Get absolutely shocked by how hard it is and how long it is.
I've never felt that, mate.
So yeah, 209.30 is the goal.
That would be incredible. So you're eyeing up Seville. I always say Sevilla because the football team.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Is it the same place?
Yeah, it is the same place, but I don't know why it's different. I sound like such a donut right now.
Spanish pronunciation, maybe?
Yeah, Sevilla.
Yeah, there we go.
I don't know. There we go. I said it with accents, so it was all right. On the topic of marathons, question for you. Now, this is something that I've seen a lot of conversation about online. Jake Dearden going for sub 220, in Houston. Is it in January?
Yeah.
Do you think he does it?
I have no doubt in my mind that Jake did and will eventually run a sub 220. In January, I have no idea. Anyone else, if it wasn't Jake Dearden, this sounds like I'm escaping with an answer.
No, because I feel like exactly what you're about to say is exactly what I think. Well, yeah. I'll let you say it.
If anyone else, I'd say absolutely not. But because it's Jake Dearden,
yeah.
I can't say no, because I didn't think he'd run a two. Well, I did actually. I was probably one of the only people who thought he'd run a two sub 230, but that was only after he ran the Great North Run.
Yeah.
When he ran, I think he ran 1:12, and he said, like, he was messaging me saying that felt like I could do that for a marathon. So I knew then, I was like, yeah, you'll definitely break 2:30 then. But before that, if you said Jake was going to run a sub 2:30, at the time I didn't really know him that well. So if you just said a Hyrox is going to run a sub 2:30, I'd be like, no chance.
Mm.
But he's done it before.
It's so tricky, isn't it? Because like, it just sounds like we're glazing him like mad. But I think until you actually know Jake and meet him, you don't realize that this guy is like the most dedicated bloke ever.
Yep.
And like, he's one of those guys that just will not stop until he's done it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like whenever I see Stick about it, and there's like a lot of runners that think what he's doing is, there's absolutely no way in hell that he'll do that. And, you know, as you said, first try, he might not get it,
mm-hmm.
but like, there is no way that he will ever give up on that without doing it.
Yeah. I have no doubt in my mind he'll run a sub 220 in his life.
Yeah.
When that is, I don't know.
It'll be interesting to hear the reasons to why people are so convinced he can't.
Jealousy. Because,
yeah. I'm sure there is an element of that, but I think there is a kind of like, physique thing that people look at, because he is so, I guess, muscular.
Mm.
Like, he's probably carrying quite a lot of weight. I don't know. That could be the reason as to why a lot of people dispute it.
Well, Jake is a very, as nice as he is, when he sets his mind on something, he's a very serious person.
Mm.
So if he doesn't achieve his goal in January, right, and he might think that is because he's got too much muscle mass, he will just go and lose that muscle mass. Nothing will stop him from achieving what he wants to achieve, which I think is a good mindset to have in most areas of life, but he will do it aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he will ignore what anyone else says or ignore the path anyone else has followed.
Yeah.
Because he's the first person, I've never seen someone with his muscle run a 2:28 marathon.
It's insane, isn't it?
So anything that Jake does is the first of its kind, I think. Mm. So he can't really follow the playbook. And that's also why I gave the answer I gave, because in the past, if you told me logically, would someone do that progression with Jake's history, I'd go no. But because it's him, logic goes out the window for me.
Do you think, obviously I'm not well versed in Hyrox whatsoever, so I feel like neither of us are, but with Jake like dropping muscle mass, there are like elite 15 guys, like I think it's Tim Venish, he's like pretty skinny, and
yeah.
he's I think he, maybe I could be wrong here, but won the world championship. He definitely won a big race last year.
Yep.
You look at people like that and go, there's actually no need to be super muscular, like muscular in Hyrox, when you're actually cardio wise at that level.
I'll say, I'm not going to name who, but I've coached a few elite. I've coached people who went to the world championships this year. And it is just, it's fitness. It's James Kelly actually did something. Apologies for anyone who's listening. This is a running podcast, so I'm going on about Hyrox, but
yeah, we'll keep it brief.
It's good.
Hyrox,
it's good content.
It's good chat.
James Kelly said, like, there's no such thing as compromised running. There's running whilst being fatigued from other exercises, but that's all. Hyrox isn't this magic. Oh, you've just done wall balls. Oh no, because that's at the end. You've just done sled push.
Shows how much we.
But yeah, that is everything I say now is going to get thrown out the window. You've just done sled push, so that means your legs have to feel like this. It is still just a fitness race. It's just, you've got to be a little bit stronger. And I think people are actually starting to realize it used to be, you've got to be a lot, lot stronger. And now when I look at the front of Hyrox races, it's usually the person with the best running form who is winning that race. I can remember it was the first Elite 15 of the season when I was watching it. And it was, again, Tim Venish and maybe it was someone else. Do you know the other names at the top or not?
Well, I know. Oh, mate, no. There's the other bloke.
Yeah, the other muscly guy.
The other muscly bloke. What's his name? He wears the cap. Yeah. He won the world championships.
Okay, let's just.
Let's park that. People will be kicking themselves in the comments here. Just screaming at their TVs.
But he and the guy next to him, again, his name escapes me. I think he was an American or Australian guy. They were the two best runners in the race, and they were first and second by an absolute mile. It's a fitness race.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of going back to Jake and him dropping more muscle if he needs to, or lose more, I don't like saying lose weight because he is losing weight, but it's purely from muscle because he's got no fat to lose. Mm-hmm. I think that'll only help his Hyrox as well, because I think they've got strength to spare in Hyrox. And I think people are starting to realise that more and more.
Yeah. Moving off Hyrox though, there was another story I saw this weekend. I think, again, it was Tommy Trees that put this on his socials. There was a cyclist, a pro cyclist, that started running a year ago. And you might know more than me. He dropped a 64-minute half, I want to say. Was that incorrect?
No, he was next to me in the race yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
He finished with you?
He finished... I'm a bit confused because he's posted saying he ran 61:27, but he ran, on the official results, he ran 61:38. So he might have actually started further back, assuming that he's moved. And
what's his name, by the way?
Something Whelan, I think. Josh Whelan? George Whelan?
Let me put that up.
No, that's going to be so wrong.
Let me just quickly get it.
He's, he was next to me in the race.
Jimmy Whelan.
There we go.
Ex-pro cyclist. He ran a 61:28 at Valencia Half. And his form's unbelievable, mate.
It was quite depressing actually being next to him because he's tall as well.
Yeah.
And his stride was just covering so much more distance than mine. He looked really good actually. His form was probably the nicest in the group.
So nice. And also that Dutch guy who got the European record.
Swedish guy.
Is he? Oh, shit, sorry. That Swedish guy. I can't keep that in.
You can.
I can't keep that in. Anyway, that bloke that got the European record.
That less muscly guy.
Well. Yeah.
He's unbelievable. Andreas, he's the fittest a European has ever been at running, I believe. Andreas Holmgren at the minute.
Really?
Maybe Jakob, but obviously short distances demand a bit more mechanical focus. And yeah, his training's mental. He's a great guy, really analytical guy. It's crazy what he just did.
What do you think it is? Because like, obviously, you got like, you know, Jimmy Whelan, the ex-pro cyclist, where he's clearly just incredibly fit guy. I think Tommy said in the video he runs once a week or something along those lines before 2024, where he started to like just dedicate his life to running. Do you think there is an element of natural gift with someone like that, or is it just because he is so fit from the life that he's had as a pro cyclist?
So running is literally fitness aerobically and mechanics.
Yeah,
that's all it is. If you break it down to its truest form, it's how efficient you are, your mechanics, and how fit you are, and how well, like, that's all it is. And he's clearly got good running genetics. His leg, most of the time, it's what you see with the East Africans. A lot of people, like, why they're so much better, is it the train, is it the altitude? It's the genetics. They're so efficient that we will, obviously on the track, we're starting to compete with Ethiopians and Kenyans in the 5K and the 10K. We will never contend with the top East Africans in the marathon and the half marathon. They're just too efficient at conserving energy with how their running mechanics are. And that's usually how long your legs are, or in particular your Achilles and your calf in comparison to the rest of your body.
Okay.
So he has good genetics. He's got long legs, like really long legs. And then bike, it's just fitness. And then you combine those two and you get a great runner.
Yeah.
It's obviously there's small things you've got to work on. Durability is a big thing. Like pounding the ground for an hour takes a lot of build up into that. But it is, if you break it down, it is just fitness. And he's got that in, clearly he's got an abundance of it based off.
What would be your advice to someone who is, I'm actually asking this advice because it is directed at me, but anyone watching or listening, if they look at their form and go, I look a bit shit and I feel like I'm not getting the most out of my body, what would be your advice to those people?
I would say a lot of it goes back to your core and also stability or mobility. So your core, generally there's some weak points. I don't just mean abs. I mean your glutes, your hips, how you rotate.
Does that count as core, your hip flexors and stuff?
I class it as core. I used to think it was just abs. You know, if I do a core routine, I'm just getting a six pack. But as far as I'm aware, it's your trunk and around the surrounding area. In terms of how that works, a lot of running mechanics comes from there, and then also your hamstring strength. So I would say without looking at a certain person in particular and going, you need to fix this, which is a hard thing to do because if they've been running that like that all their life, you can't just tell them to change it because they'll just be compensating in a different way and probably get injured or just make their running form worse. So you just go, that's likely because you've got a weak, let's just say left glute, and you've got to put the steps in place to strengthen that area. But as a general rule of thumb, strengthening core, abs, hips and glutes, mainly through obviously the generic ab exercises like plank, dead bugs is a really good one to do because that really makes you hold your core together and work on the keeping it stable without rotating. I would say that is the vast majority of running form issues. And then another one for me is actually, which is going to be bad for people to hear, is like desk jobs or sitting down a lot.
Mm.
Without putting the steps in place to loosen your back after a day working in the office over a longer period of time, the amount of restriction you have because of how stiff your back is, how stiff your hips are, and how stiff your neck can be, especially as well if you're looking down at your phone, that has a massive effect on your mechanics as well. So those are the fixes anyone can do and will probably get better mechanics and reduce the risk of injury by a lot as well.
This is going to sound super boring, mate. So apologies, anyone listening. Do you think like people who employ people in those desk jobs need to do more to stop issues happening? Like, do you think there needs to be more accountability to people making them do these jobs?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
It's obviously easy for me to say that as someone whose job is running.
Yeah, of course.
But when I had, you know, I've ran when I've had an office job and, you know, I ran, actually my first GB vest was while I was working in my first ever office job. So I've made it work. But during that time, I felt horrendous quite a lot of the time. So for me, I mean, the quickest fix, and I think it's probably becoming more common, is just like a stand-up desk.
Yeah, I know. Seems easy, no?
Yeah, you can get Amazon attachments. What, literally, you put it on the table and it's got extendable legs. Mm. To be honest, obviously, you'd want the workplace to pay for it, but I think they're like £30.
Oh,
it's probably a great investment for anyone who's got a tiny bit of disposable income to put it on that because it dramatically affects your health and your running if that's what you care about.
No, it is interesting because I always look, I'm now looking at myself more. So after Chicago, I was like, I was so inefficient, like horrendously inefficient. And I definitely have some weakness in my hamstrings and my hips and glutes, which kind of almost makes me, when I watch myself running, I kind of look like I'm constantly sort of like, I don't have much back propulsion. Like I don't have much of a kick behind my stride, which feels like I'm sort of just, oh, I can't even describe it. It almost feels like I'm straight legging forward.
You're not powering forward.
Yeah, exactly. So then I don't activate my hamstrings because my body knows your hamstrings are weak, so don't activate them, which is a frustrating one, but I'm definitely going to try and fix that over like the winter period.
Another thing, getting really into it, and it's probably the last thing I'll tell people to do purely because it's a bit more, there's not a higher injury risk. Well, there technically is, but it's having more leg tension.
Yeah.
So you do that from plyometrics and speed work. Your body's ability to take the impact on the ground and use that as force to push you forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice that's why I do a race the week before a race. It's because the benefits you get from tapering a bit, doing more aggressive strides, working on speed really helps your mechanics because you have so much more power in your body. But then you've got to find the line between doing that and having too much impact, and then that's how you get injured.
So have you, like, obviously you run an insane amount a week. Have you had any bad injuries recently, or have you kind of just like evaded them just from continuing running? How's it work?
This is going to be a wonderful clip for you, by the way.
Yeah, go on.
The only time I've been injured in the last 6 years was after I took a break from running.
Yeah, that's insane.
So I've ran a lot, and at the end of every season, I knew it was to take 5 days off. Took 5 days off. I think it's probably the lack of running just stiffened me up. Came back to running, first run back, injured. It's the only time I've been injured in the last 6 years was this August before Iceland, and I didn't run Tuesday, Wednesday or Thursday, so I had 3 days off. So it's nothing crazy, but for me that's a lot of time.
Well, if you think about it, your body goes like, okay, I'm moving every day, and then suddenly I'm not moving. Tense up, I guess that's mental.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you run today?
20K.
You ran 20K today after doing that yesterday?
Two 10Ks, but yeah, 20K.
And what pace were you doing that at?
Slow.
What's slow?
Well, sorry, yeah.
No, I don't mean to do
like
that.
Like 4:15, and then I just ran.
It's just sub 3 pace.
Just ran before this, probably a bit slower, but that's kind of running through London. You've always got to.
Wait, you ran here?
No, I ran around Battersea with, I'm not going to name drop actually.
Yeah.
I ran around Battersea and up to sort of Westminster and then back.
Sick.
Yeah. And that was a bit slower.
Yeah, right. I've got a few things I want to ask you because I did put a little question box on my broadcast channel. Some of these are from that, some of these just aren't.
Yep.
Firstly, your PBs, what I want to do is I want to rank them, okay? So have you seen that trend where it goes, these are my PBs, which one's the worst?
Okay, yeah, I've seen it, yeah.
Obviously, in your situation, you've not done a marathon, so we're going to have to just cross that one through. Half marathon, 61:26. 10K.
28:12.
5K.
13:46.
And then should we say 3,000 meters to compensate for the...
Yeah, yeah.
Yes?
7:52.
Right. We'll have them all on screen right now. What do you think is your weakest PB of all of those?
5K.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you think you can go a lot faster then or...
I don't know. On the track, no.
Okay.
Because I just... can't run in spikes anymore. It's a whole different story. On the road, yeah. I mean, in my 10K, I did it at the Manchester 10K. My first 5K was 13:50. And in the Sheffield 10K I did the other week, my last 5K, it was downhill, but I ran 13:25. So yeah, I could run a lot quicker, but my official PB, it's definitely the slowest.
And what's the kilometer split for that?
2:45.
That's mental. Absolutely mental, mate. But you've got more in the tank for that, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be able to run quicker. It's definitely my worst by quite a margin.
Yeah, cool. All right. There's one here that I'm very, very intrigued to see what you think about. Okay. You're quite... I don't want to say you're an opinionated guy because you're quite quiet, but then suddenly you'll just come out with this, you know... this strong opinion about something, which I think is super refreshing. What are the top three running myths that have been made popular by social media?
It's a really tricky question. I want to give the best answer possible.
You can just spitball me, mate, and we can choose the best ones out of what you think.
The one that instantly screams to my head, which is not really related to running that much, is sauna and recovery.
Okay, interesting.
Sauna's a workout. Like, it's
get your heart rate up.
Yeah, I use sauna for fitness, and it's usually a tough thing to do.
You're so big into your like heat training.
Massive, aren't you? Massive into my heat training. Yeah,
yeah.
So I say that is one, even though that's not really one.
But ice bath, do you think it helps?
No, ice bath's a lot of rubbish.
Really?
Yeah. In terms of longevity, maybe with brain health, and also just mental toughness.
That's it.
Absolutely.
It's the mental toughness thing, because you're kind of defeating that, you know, objective of being like, right, I don't want to go in this, but I'm going to do it. And that's just a mental battle that you've won.
But in terms of training, it's actually probably negative affects you, because it's great before a race if you want to try and get some last minute recovery in. There's some signs there. But if you have an ice bath after a session or after a gym session, you're reducing your training benefits. Because this is the really dumbed down version. It almost recovers you too fast. You don't get the adaptations.
Right.
So you literally get less of a training effect because of an ice bath.
Right.
So yeah, that's another one, a running myth. Zone two is definitely one.
I can't be arsed with this, man.
Extra value meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Because
you can't be saying zone two isn't effective, surely.
Well, I think it's more, if I had to describe it, I'd say zone one, what's more effective than zone two, to be honest. Like zone two, my zone two for context is like 3:30 per kilometer. If I was running zone two every day for my easy runs, I would be fatigued and injured within a month. And yes, if you are running less, it is a bit more effective because you're not running as much, so you have more pace to play with, let's say. But I think a much more dynamic training structure would definitely be a much better way to go. So a lot of zone one and then a lot at sort of threshold would be okay. A much better option.
So what's your heart rate then for your zone two? Is it different for you, or is it kind of a general rule of thumb for everyone?
It's a percentage of your max heart rate, I think, or, you know, you can have really custom zones if you have a test.
But I need to do this. I think my max heart rate is like 190, I'd say.
Yeah, it probably is around that.
Yeah.
Mine's like 156 zone two, I think.
Okay.
Depends if I'm fatigued or not, but I'm running my heart rate on easy runs at like 120 something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a quite big difference.
Interesting. So what, you're doing 340 with a 127 heart rate?
No, that would be like 140 odd.
Okay, sorry. And yeah. Then 127 is your zone one.
Yeah.
So you think zone two training is just incorrectly labeled, essentially?
Yeah, or incorrectly applied.
Right. And do you think there's an element to it? Because for me, let's say, I'll run a 6-minute pace as an easy run and I'll feel sweet and I'll feel fine afterwards. I'll have no kind of issue or any DOMS or anything like that. Would you say that that is taking it easy? Because you mentioned 340 probably isn't going to give you DOMS. It's probably not going to make you feel tired, but it could cause injury. Would yeah. 6 cause injury if I was doing that volume?
I would say you have to be honest with... You can probably answer this better than me.
Yeah.
Could you keep that pace going forever if you were just fueled? Like, say if you're on a treadmill and someone gave you a tube of fuel, could you keep
That's a really interesting point, actually. I think I could probably do... I would like to think I could do 60K at that pace.
Okay. I'd say you're probably there or thereabouts then.
That's me just plucking a number out of thin air, by the way.
What would be the... limiting factor at 60, like muscle cramps and just getting too fatigued?
Yeah, I think it would be that. And also, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, okay. If I would say an easy way to do it is if you're at any point in your zone one run and you're going, unless you're really new into running, by the way, because every run's hard at that point.
Yeah.
If you're in your zone two run or your easy run, sorry, and you think this is starting to get tough, you need to slow down. Like at any point, if that's the case, you need to slow down. Mm-hmm. If it's meant to be an easy run, it's labeled as an easy run. If you can't, again, this is where someone might go, well, actually, I have this thing where I can't breathe properly, so it'll be heavy. But if you can't sing a song while you're doing an easy run, you're not running easy enough.
Okay. All right.
In terms of a long-term sustainable easy run pace.
That's a good rule of thumb. So essentially, you think there's loads of people out there that are training ineffectively based off a notion that zone two is the king of all improvement.
Yeah, but going back to the first thing we mentioned as well, doing zone two work is probably better than doing a lot of other things. It's just not as good as people make it out to be,
okay.
If that makes sense. Like if I go, if you did 5 days of zone two running, it's better than not running, or it's better than doing 5 days of running as hard as you can. So there's a lot of different ways... I guess, what is it? There's many ways to skin a cat. Is that the saying?
Yeah. Good phrase that.
But so I'm not going to say it's a terrible way to train because it's still effective. It's just not as this magic thing that people make it out to be.
Interesting. I've always thought of it as like, I'll do like my easy runs, let's say. A good easy run for me is like an average heart rate of 140.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like to you, that wouldn't be classed as a proper easy run. Whereas for me, it's rare that I'll be running and my heart rate's not at least 130.
Yeah. I'd say the 130s is fine. If you're starting to get into the 140s, obviously if you've got a good heart rate strap, if it's wrist. Okay. If it's wrist, and if you're doing any zone training and you're just using a wrist heart rate,
dumb, yeah.
It's literally, I did a run earlier and because... you know, I might be too warm. It might not be on properly. My heart rate was saying 156.
Mm.
It wasn't 156. As soon as I put the heart rate strap on, it's accurate again, or a lot more accurate. So if I was doing zone training, it would be irrelevant. I'd have to walk if I was doing zone training with a wrist strap. So that's obviously something you've got to solve first. But yeah, I'd say the 130s is probably fine.
Interesting. All right, I'll keep that in mind. Third myth.
I would say race-based training is definitely something as well.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
Well, put it this way. Yesterday, my average pace was 254.
Okay.
I ran 1 kilometer at 254. The rest of my race was completely different splits. So for me, if I'm training for a 5K, and I think it's much more valuable to just go, my goal is to get fitter And yes, we're probably guilty of this actually by posting saying our goal pace is 3 hours for a marathon, or our goal pace is a 15-minute 5K or something like that. It's just much better to go, my goal is to get as good of running as possible, and I'm going to do the training to do that. When people get fixated on a goal time, that then becomes, most of the time, you're not actually training at race pace, you're training at goal race pace, which is either too fast or too slow, almost always. It's never actually, you are bang on that fitness, because in any race, there's so many variables that are going to change that pace. But also, if you're doing a session, you're not tapered, and you don't have the race day adrenaline. So the day before my race on Sunday, I did a threshold for 2 minutes, and I was more tired in that 2 minutes than I was for the first 10K of my race. And I ran 3:12 per kilometer. So for me on that day, if I was trying to do race pace for that, which technically threshold is my half marathon race pace, I would have fatigued myself. And if I did, so 2:54, which I ran average for the half marathon, I have done 1 3K rep and 2 1K reps quicker than that since August. Everything else has been slower, or like 400 meter reps quicker, or 200 meter reps quicker. That's it. And I average that pace of 21K.
Do you think there's an element of like when it's a race? I think a marathon is a different beast because you kind of have to set yourself a ballpark, I guess. But with a half marathon, I every like half marathon I've PB'd, I've never been like, right, I need to stick at this pace. I've just sort of thought 21K, I could feel really shit by like the 17K mark, but I'm just going to give it a whack.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds really dumb to say, but it's almost like when you've got your like long run head on, your marathon head on, the half marathon does feel like a sprint comparatively.
Yeah.
And so when you know that, you're sticking to your half marathon pace, and out of the 10K, the first 10K, you've hit your half marathon pace like three times, the rest of it has all been quicker, you're probably like, oh, I could be in a dangerous spot here. But you know, when you get to like 18K and you probably hit that wall mm-hmm. of feeling pretty shit, you're going to be able to just firm it for 4 more K.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess the argument is you can't do that in a marathon because you're
exactly.
Otherwise,
you'll do exactly what I did, where you hit the halfway mark and go, I wish this race was over now.
I would say the ideal best case scenario would be, rather than wording it as half marathon pace, you go, this is my race effort today. This is the effort that I am going at in the race, because then it gives you a better idea of how your body actually reacts to a pace. But also in training, that eliminates the adrenaline again, and eliminates not tapering, and you go, this is race effort. Because most of the time, almost always, like I just said, you'll be running at goal pace. That's not how fit you are. That's a number someone has plucked out of the air. It can be backed up by training sessions, but even that, when people post on social media, do this to predict your 5K time, do this, it's not true. So people just pluck out, I could say tomorrow, I want to run a 30-minute 5K, 13 flat, and I'll start training to try and run that. I'll start doing reps at 13 flat 5K pace. Doesn't mean it's my 5K pace. So you need to train. If you want to train optimally, then it's more about training to effort than race pace.
Got you.
And a lot of the time, race pace is hard. So if you did that in training, again, you're not going to get adaptations. You're probably going to get increased injury risk, and you're probably going to get ill. So it's just a bit risky. So that's why I kind of really don't like it. When people always ask me, well, what's your go-to 5K session? What's your go-to 1500 meter session? What's your go-to 10K session? Half marathon session. A lot of it is not at 5K pace. So it's people, I say that and people are like, it's not what I asked. It's like, no, that's, I'm giving you the answer.
Yeah.
My favorite 5K session is probably running 400 meters at 3K pace because it gets you what you need, as long as you've got the backing of the fitness. Same with half. Like, all my sessions for the half marathon have been slower than half marathon pace. All of them. I did 1 3K rep, which is quicker, and 2 1Ks. Everything else has been slower.
That is crazy, isn't it? Like, I almost feel like sometimes you do need to just break it down way more simple than what kind of we all talk about online, I guess. Best carbon race day shoes?
Puma Fast Off 3.
Without a shadow?
Yeah, in my opinion. Out of everything I've worn, Puma Fast Off 3.
Now, I've got a pair. I haven't run in them yet, but I tried them on and almost fell over backwards.
Mm-hmm.
because I do heel strike a little bit, but also when you stand on them, they feel really weird because they have no heel.
Yep.
Do you recommend them for people that aren't heel strikers?
So I'm going to say something which not people struggle to say, but it's, I don't know. So I don't actually know because I'm not a heel striker. On paper, I would say they should be fine and okay because I still think there's enough there. And with the carbon plate, kind of some shoes now, like the Asics Metaspeed Ray, it only has half a carbon plate. So it's harder to utilize that unless you're running a certain way. But in theory, it's not a full carbon plate.
So it's only the front of the shoe?
Yeah, I think it's only the front of the shoe, yeah.
Mad.
So I still think it'd be the best for everyone unless you're running, let's say, slower than a four-hour marathon.
Yeah.
But then probably you shouldn't even be wearing a carbon plate. Probably
I did speak about this with Ben.
Yeah.
We spoke about that and it was like, do you think there's a cutoff to where they become useful?
Yeah, because maybe not useful, but I think the cutoff is more for safety purposes and just giving you a nicer time. So I'm not sure what shoe he said. I'm not listening to it.
He didn't. He said he believes that they'll benefit everyone on an efficiency level.
Yeah.
But do you want to be wearing a carbon pair of trainers for 6 hours?
No. I'd say, I'll answer that as well. Asics Megablast would be the best option for anyone else for not carbon. It's just, I would say, I've said this to a lot of people, the Puma Fast Off 3 doesn't feel out of this world when it's on its foot. It feels like a carbon plated shoe. I look at my watch after I've done a rep and I'm like, that's quicker than it felt. Oh, sorry, that's slower than it felt. So I ran quicker. Yeah, that's quicker than it felt. Sorry.
I get what you mean.
You just run quicker in it. I couldn't describe it.
Everyone does say this because I think there's like been a few efficiency tests done with it and it always does seem to come out on top.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting. I'm looking forward to trying it.
Yeah, I would give it a good go, but I'd pick, if I'm guessing, assuming you're going to try it in a session first.
Yeah.
I would pick an aggressive session.
Okay.
Because that's where it really comes alive.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel special. In fact, underfoot, the Saucony Endorphin Elite feels better. The Alphafly 3 feels better. The Adios Pro 4 feels more comfortable.
You're not a fan of that one, are you?
No. again, though, it's probably about talking about zone two running. Still good. It's just not top tier.
It's not for you.
It's people go, people's feet are different and have different opinions. Objectively, it's not as good. I don't
see. I actually just love it though. It feels so nice.
Don't care.
Don't care.
Yeah. I'd, honestly,
cool, mate. Don't care.
People will go, it's your, but objectively, if you put that in an efficiency lab test, I guarantee you that would not be as efficient.
So why does everyone wear it then?
Because it feels nice.
Right.
And a lot of people are coming into it. Let's be honest, Adidas are kind of the trendiest at the minute with the Evo SL as well. Three stripes kind of looks sick with most outfits. Like I'm just picturing like a classic look in my head. It's usually someone with like UVU shorts on and then Adios Pros.
You're just saying my fucking race fit for Chicago.
Yeah. I could probably even guess what colour, but I'm not going to do that.
Go on, guess.
Are you going to wear blue or something?
Nah,
somewhere?
I wore
okay,
the pink
nice.
Ones, mate.
Yeah, but pink Adidas as well, with the pink stripes?
No, I wore the black half tights of the pink shoes.
Okay.
White socks.
It's a cool fit, right?
That, I mean, I just thought you don't really see a pair of pink shoes too often.
Yeah, fair. That'll be a nice look. And I think that's probably part of the appeal, but also because they do feel nice.
Yeah.
But sometimes you want a shoe what almost... I mean, running in trying to think of a really good high cushion shoe now. Running in the old Invincible. Did you ever wear the Invincible?
Yeah, I thought it was like running in sand.
Okay, so you didn't like... That's probably a bad example for you. That would be nicer than running in a carbon plate.
Yeah.
Running in a really comfort shoe will always be nicer than running in a carbon plate.
You tried them new stupid air bubble ones?
I want to try them, but I've not yet.
So, I think they look sick.
Yep.
And the Vomero Plus are way better.
Okay.
But the Premium... I've never felt so unstable in such a like cushioned shoe.
Aren't they like super, super heavy as well?
They are, but like...
You don't notice it.
All easy shoes to me are quite heavy, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're crazy. They're not... I say they're stupid. They've probably serve a purpose, but I think they've made them more as a kind of gimmick thing than an actual like good shoe. I think the Vomero Plus is sick.
It's kind of what they did with the Pegasus though as well.
Right.
The Pegasus is the premium with the bubble, right?
Yeah.
The Pegasus Premium is a bit of a gimmick as well. I don't think anyone wears it in terms of to actually run. It's more of like a fashion statement.
Got you.
Which is a shame because if you're making a running shoe, you kind of want them to apply the science and go, this is the shoe. So I know Conor Mantz, the new American record holder, was testing the Vomero, I'll just call it the Bubble Vomero, just for ease of getting it confused with the Premium Plus, yeah. which I always do. He was saying it's like the greatest shoe he's ever worn. That's clearly not the shoe what came out to the public. So during the testing, obviously you make it, let's say, more stable to suit everyone. You might add some more durable materials, some cheaper materials, and somewhere along the way, it's the shoe we now have, which isn't the same shoe that he was clearly describing as he was testing it, which is a shame, because when you hear like rumors that a shoe is going to be absolutely unreal, and then you try it and you're just underwhelmed.
Yeah.
I
haven't heard anyone go, yeah, it's so sick. But the Plus is sick. I think it's really good.
Really comfy.
Yeah, I really like it, man. All right, so you've said Fastar is the best carbon trainer. What's your next pick from that?
I'd still say I have three now, to be fair, which on any given day, I would pick over the other. The Alphafly 3.
Yep.
The Diadora Garra Carbon 1 or 2, the same shoe, and the Saucony Endorphin Elite 2. The Saucony Endorphin Elite 2 is the only one I'd say with a caveat. Because I know I've spoken to heavier runners who have said that just feels like the foam just falls, like it just squishes way too much.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the cutoff for that weight is. It was a big gym guy who was telling me this, because he actually bought it because I did a good review on it, and he was like, I had to send it back because it was too squishy.
Really?
But the others, I don't think the Alphafly, the Diadora would have that same problem. So they're my top four, I think, overall.
And then in terms of like, if someone's trying to, because there is so many shoes now and there's so many different people promoting different types of shoe, comprehensively, your picks, someone's got budget for any two pair of shoes. So let's say it's a race day or a tempo shoe and an easy shoe. What two are you going with?
The Asics Mega Blast.
Okay.
Is a perfect shoe for pretty much almost everything.
Yeah.
So I'd say that just because of its versatility, it has to be the Asics Mega Blast. And now, before, if you asked me this before I tried the Asics Mega Blast, I'd say an easy run shoe and a race day shoe. Now, I think because the Asics Mega Blast covers easy to race day, I would actually say now it's the Mega Blast, which is a training shoe and a race day shoe, just so you can go faster on race day. I would say the Mega Blast and the Puma Fastar 3.
Nice.
But my old answer would have been the Puma Fastar 3 and honestly, the Skechers Aero Burst. Yeah. It's my favorite high cushion shoe at the minute. But the answer could also be the Hoka Bondi 9.
Yeah, Bondi 9, weirdly, like after a while, felt like a bit of plantar fasciitis.
I think I can't remember if it's a high or low drop, but it's Hoka's shoes kind of are structured a tiny bit differently. So that can happen if think the low drop.
Right.
It's one of the two. I don't pay attention to stuff like that because it's irrelevant for me. I've never found it. Yeah. But I know that it is one of those, and that's probably why some shoes do. That's where subjectivity does come into it, and everybody's feet are a bit different for those kind of things.
What's your next 6 months looking like? What's the kind of dream for Alfie Manfort? Because like things have changed a ton since we first spoke to now.
Yeah, to be honest, if you ask me this next week, it might be a bit different. So this is very much sat here now. I would say right now, I first of all want to get cross country ready. So I'm doing the national cross country relays at the weekend, but after that, the goal is to make the European cross team and the world championship cross team.
Do you have a good chance at that?
Yes, but so do about 20 other people.
Okay.
Cross country is one of those things. It's almost like a really honest day where you strip everything back and just let everyone go racing. It's almost like an F1. Actually, no, the best description is like, can they do it on a cold, wet night in Stoke? It's basically that for running.
Mate, it's insane because it isn't really about time, is it? It's about place.
Yeah.
That's the cool part about it. Like, I mean, I've never done cross country in my life. In fact, I used to shy away from it at school. But I see you lot doing it. I'm just like, that just looks a hard graph, man.
There's
no glitz or glamour. It's just old school racing.
Survival. That's all it is. Like, pacing goes out the window. Your goal is to set off as fast as possible so you have a good position. If not, there's no point being in the race because there's too many people to run through. It's too muddy. It's just terrible. So you have to set off sprinting and then you've just got to survive. That's literally it.
How long are cross-country races?
So the qualification will be 10K or 9K, depending on... That's the beauty of it as well. Most of them, if they're labelled at 10K, will either be 9 or 11. It's just free.
And it's always just on grass, isn't it?
Yeah, grass. Could be on clay. A lot of Spanish racers do like clay or dirt, like really firm. You can wear a carbon shoe on those.
Wait, but I thought you have to wear cross country spikes.
So now they've changed the rules where you can actually wear road flats again for cross country.
Really?
Which is weird and quite technical, whereas before you had to wear spikes. But for in the UK, you definitely always want to wear spikes. Because
do spikes have a carbon plate in?
Some do. For cross country, it doesn't matter because of how muddy it usually is. The plate obviously needs...
You're not going to get the feedback.
Yeah, it needs the ground to have the impact to push off. Whereas cross country, that impact is basically your leg getting sucked by the mud. It's really... I recommend everyone does a cross country
race. You
know
what I want to do? I want to do a video where like you take me on a cross country run because I want to try this out because this is fascinating, man.
Well, this is not to make content for you or like propose what you do. There's a race called the Liverpool Cross Challenge, which is the qualification for the Europeans. But we do that race in line with, I believe, the Liverpool League as well. So even though it's our elite race, all the runners who do the Liverpool League do it. You could also do the National Cross. So these are two options for you to do where you can race the elites, but also just experience the pure cross country.
Yeah. I just race other bums like me? Like just
well,
people who
everyone
shit.
Will be in the race. So
yeah, but they'll all be good, mate. Like, can I just race, like go and do like, you know, like a run through event, that sort of thing.
I don't think they'll be doing cross countries. And it's not the same experience because when it's an elite race and there's hundreds or thousands of runners, lap one is completely different to lap three because of how much the mud changes. Like it's literally, you're pulling your legs out of mud. It gets that bad. It is horrendous. It is honestly the most brutal type of racing.
So right, okay, say a cross country course is 10K. You don't know the terrain. You don't know the variability of like incline. What was the typical time for you in the 10K cross country?
So again, this is where it gets thrown out the window again because I've ran like a 36 minute 10K. Yeah. I think actually at the European Cross Country Championships when I did it, it was 8K. And I ran, I think 6 minute miles. So like 3:45 per kilometer. And the winner.
Pretty mud.
Yeah. Well, that's like, I've also ran a 30 minute 10K for like a relatively muddy. But that day was so muddy. Like it was a minute per kilometer slower than running on the road. That's about as bad as it gets. Or as bad as
mad.
I felt it. But yeah, it honestly depends because most of the time it's not even the distance it says. So it's impossible to tell.
That's crazy. I'm definitely going to look into this because I do want to try it. Just even if it's just to like completely like humble myself.
It will.
Yeah. Oh, mate. I literally remember doing it at school and I was like always like at the back. And as I got older, I think it was when I was like, I want to say 15 or I would have been year 11. I remember doing my like final cross country and I was like, actually like, not as fat and slow anymore. And I like came middle of the pack or whatever, but it was hilarious, mate. I used to just get absolutely just flamed every race. I was always at the back, always the one they were waiting for. But yeah, I'd love to give it a go again. It does sound a laugh.
It's funny. I actually have raced Jake before. Jake did in a cross country race, like 2016. I was a year below him at school and he said, I saw a video where he said he used to do cross country. So I looked at his results and looked at mine. And we'd race before.
I think Mary said that about Becky as well.
Well, Mary and Becky, I spent the weekend with Becky in Valencia. But like Mary, I've ran with Mary since I was six.
Yeah.
Like Mary is one of, probably in terms of running related things, now is probably the longest person I've known in running.
That's crazy, yeah. I remember she posted a photo and it was you like looking mad young.
I was so much shorter than her as well. I didn't grow until I was about 16.
How tall are you now?
Officially, or what I say?
Well, officially, mate. We'll go with the official.
Right. Unfortunately, I'm technically probably 5'11 and a bit.
Okay. All right, close.
I say 6 foot.
All right, cool. Yeah, you're not a short guy. You've got a good height for running.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I wish I had longer legs, but...
Yeah. Look, Alf, thanks so much for coming on, man. Once again, great chatting.
Yeah,
it's sick to see like everything that's going on in your world because I think the reason, I mean, I particularly love your stuff and so many other people do is just how like just real and honest you are. And it's sick to see, man. So yeah, keep smashing it.
No, thank you.
I'm buzzing. I was so excited when I messaged Joe, your manager, obviously, who I know well. I was like, how's he getting on? Because I couldn't load the stream. And he was like, first Brit, beat Alex Yee. And I was like, this guy, man, generational talent.
Well, I'm glad that happened because when we arranged to originally have it a few days ago and then you were like, let's have it after.
Yeah, I was like, when's the race? Oh yeah, it's Sunday. Why would we do a pod before it? Because it would then come out after you'd done the race.
But in that whole time, I've kind of prepped two scenarios. I was like, what am I going to say if I race terribly?
Yeah.
Like, so how's the podcast going to go? What am I going to talk about? So I'm happy that didn't happen because that was a genuine concern.
Well, I could have just said to you, look, if it went that badly, we can do it another time. Or you can just...
No, I'd affirm it. I'd have to affirm it. Yeah. I'd come on regardless.
No, I respect that big time. Look, everyone go check Alf out. Let them know where to find you.
I think it's just my name on everything.
Yeah.
At Alfie Manthorpe. Yeah. YouTube, actually.
It's Alfie Runs or something on TikTok.
It is Alfie Runs. Yeah. But I think you can just search Alfie Manthorpe and it'll come up. But I've actually just uploaded... I can't believe I'm plugging myself here.
Go on,
That laptop over there is actually uploading a video of my Valencia half marathon now.
Is it sick?
And you know the YouTube hustle is a different game. So if you want to watch that, it's a full vlog of the race day.
Are you still doing your pod with Ewan?
Occasionally. We need to get more into it again.
Yeah.
Since I've moved to Manchester, it's been tricky to get time.
You moved in with your girlfriend, didn't you, in Manchester? That's sick. Congrats, man.
Thank you. Yeah. It's been actually, can I call you out on the podcast?
Oh, go on.
I've seen that you've recently got your wedding invitations through.
Yeah.
So I'll send you my address after this and then I'll get that through because I thought it looked really nice. So
you can host the shakeout, mate.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect.
This guy, man. I love it. Look, thank you so much for coming on, man. Appreciate you. And keep smashing it.
Oh, thank you for having me. I always love coming on.